The Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention?
We're on the eve of destruction.
And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
We finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is... The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
And on the eve of the Beavers returning to action on the gridiron against San Jose State at 1230, we have, by the way, a lot of guests. We are both in the process of trying to accrue for the show. We have a couple of scheduled guests. Mm-hmm. In fact, tomorrow at around 11:45, a former Beaver coach who I really like and is the D coordinator for San Jose State. He was one of my favorite guys on the staff. I know we kind of look back on the Gary Anderson era, and, and maybe a little cringy. But when I heard Jaden Grant talk about Corey Hall, as he did with us, about Hall's influence on his life, and when I think about other players that came through that era, when I think about some of the people I got to meet, Derek Odom, who was among my favorite guys on that staff, and he's been the DC now at San Jose State the last several seasons. I'll have the detail exactly when we get him on. But he'll join us tomorrow for a few minutes. It'll be right after practice. We'll talk to Derek Odom about San Jose State under Ken Niumatalolo and the year they're having. It's been a good year, better than expected, I think. So he'll join us tomorrow. J.B. Long will join us on Thursday. J.B. will have the call on the CW and the men's basketball game on Friday. As he said, I'm blessed to be working two games this weekend for the Beavers. Friday night in hoops, Saturday afternoon in football. The voice of the Rams on radio, outstanding broadcaster.
Do they have a bye week?
I'm not sure.
They must.
Well, I don't know if they do, but he can be like Barry Tompkins and others who can find their way from Corvallis, double duty, Friday and Saturday, to wherever he needs to be on Sunday. Joe Starkey, Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, others through the years have engaged in such behaviors, getting from the college day on Saturday to the pro football game on Sunday, and rarely missed. I mean, the miracle of the travel world and the connections. So are you checking the Rams schedule? Do they have a bye?
Yes, I can confirm they have a bye.
Okay, well, that frees JB up, but it wouldn't necessarily...
I'm sorry. My bad. I take that back. They play Monday night.
Okay, well, that's kind of like a bye then with respect to JB's weekend.
Sure.
But he can talk to us about a lot of things, including the resurgence of the Rams, including Beaver basketball and football and other matters in his busy broadcast world. He'll join us later in the week. But that'll be Thursday, in fact, the next day, back to the mnemonic device and the contemplation of Rise Street and things rising to the level of emails. I think I've been saying we'll be at 1964 Rye Street Southeast in Albany on Friday. And Dougie said that actually generated an email out of the offices of Stutzman and Krupp Contractors, who will be our host, saying, hey, we're actually at 1954 Rye Street, and I've been saying 64, so my apologies. I hope
that is absolutely inexcusable.
I know it is, but the mnemonic device at work, I'll never forget it, because, you know, in 64, you could have gone Beaver's Rose Bowl, seven games, Ken Boyer, Grand Slam.
What about 54?
Gibson, 54, you got Vic Wertz and the catch, so you'll never forget it now. And Gene Horvath is a huge baseball guy, and he would appreciate the reference to either Boyer, McCarver, Barney Schultz, I think, getting the final out in Game 7, Lou Brock.
But you weren't born yet.
In 64. I'm saying the mnemonic device, we stayed with 64 Rye Street, would have been that or Tommy and the Beavers going to the Rose Bowl in 64. 7-6, Al East blocking the extra point. Bless his heart.
Yeah.
Booker Washington scoring his only Oregon State touchdown in his whole career for the six and the 7 points to beat Oregon, 7-6 to go to the Rose Bowl in 64. That's a better mnemonic hook, but it ain't 1964. It's 1954. And I don't know what if I say 1954, first thing that comes to mind for me is Vic Wertz and Willie Mays and the catch. That's it. 1954, knee-jerk reaction. Word Associates, 1954, Vic Wertz. I don't know what comes to your mind if I say 1954, but that's it for me.
But why does that come to your mind if you weren't born yet?
Well, it doesn't, because we've read.
Read? You mean look at things in the past?
That 1954, early in my existence, after being born.
Right.
In 4 years later, 1958. But I'm just saying, once I came of age with respect to, okay, there's this thing called baseball. It is interesting, the whole expression of before my time.
Yeah,
that was before
that's
my
what
time.
I was getting
right.
at.
It's an interesting expression, but it is apropos in this sense. Now, I wasn't born in 54.
No.
But early in my life, the education of a baseball fan or whatever, or the education of a Beaver fan or whatever sport you've loved and favored, as soon as you come into knowledge that such a thing exists, generally speaking, it leads you to not just, hey, I sure hope the Beavers beat San Jose State on Saturday. You have a little more, you begin to become interested in this, the whole operation, reality, phenomenon of the thing that you're enjoying. At least that was
for me. Yeah, me too. The history.
Yeah, exactly. So that in baseball, it did feel to me, 10 years now for us is nothing. It's like a wave of a hand, 10 years. But when I came of age with baseball in 1966 and read of October 8th, 1956, 2 years before I was born, but October 8th of 56, I read of that early in my baseball education and life, but it might as well have been 1756 or 1956 when I first discovered that Don Larsen threw a perfect game on October 8th, 1956, and I read about that when I was 8 years old in 1966.
Right.
I'm looking at the photographs of Larsen in the windup, Billy Martin at second base behind him, a photograph of Mickey Mantle making a backhanded catch, probably the best defensive play to preserve the perfect game that day, October 8th of 56. That might as well have been ancient history, and it was just 10 years before.
I know. It's a really weird phenomenon. For us, and I know we're not exactly getting off my lawn or waxing poetic, but it's fun to kind of remember where you grew up. And in the era that I grew up, a few years younger than you, we didn't have, obviously, what we have now, which is the phone and the internet and all that stuff. So when we had to go to school and we were forced to do subjects that were not sports, like math and social studies, we would turn them into sports.
Yes.
And that would get us into the library, and that would get us into checking out books. And I remember reading any sports book I could get my hand on as a youth. One in particular was a book about basketball, and all the photographs were black and white, and it was about the Bob Cousy and Bob Pettit. And that time period and how great Cousy was. I grew up wanting to be Bob Cousy.
Right.
And this was 1980, so I'm 25 years removed. But again, with the black and white pictures,
it looked like ancient history.
It might as well have been.
Right.
1,000 years earlier.
Yeah, Civil War type.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just because of the time that's our choice was the library and books. Right. Now it's the internet and they can have everything now. And it was yesterday, was 1,000 years ago was yesterday and all of that. I get that. And I'm not even railing against it.
No, not at all.
But describing our growing up, you're right. 10 years earlier was so. And then when you get older, at least for me, when I got older, I started to look at those 10 years and think, well, gosh, that was only 10 years before I was born. So
exactly.
It wasn't that far from when I was a human being and living and breathing. And then that really connects you. And then you can really get lost in the weeds. And I've done this on the morning show. It's like, okay, so it's been X amount of years since this happened. And I remember it. Well, how many years if you go backwards from your birth? And it's like, wow. It's been more time sometimes from birth till now and living life. And like, oh, yeah, I remember that. But if you were to go backwards, it would take you back to something like the Revolutionary War practically.
Right.
And then you get just kind of freaked out by time.
It's a bizarre concept. Indeed, it is. But all I know is a 1954 Rye Street.
Yeah.
And as you drive there to join us, and we're going to have a great time, a delicious, free, and rather lavish lunch as we experienced there the last time we stopped by. Stutzman and Krupp Contractors, Vic Wirtz Rye Street, 1954 Rye Street Southeast in Albany. They do it right. There'll be a lot of Beaver swag to give away, raffle prizes, the free lunch, tickets to the Beaver San Jose State game, Spring Hill Country Club, 9 holes of golf, 2 of those certificates to give away. 3-game bowling pack from Highland Bowl. So that's Friday. Stutzman and Krupp Contractors and Gene Horvath would appreciate the baseball mnemonic device. He would think of 1954. Well, two things come to mind for me immediately. One is Vic Wirtz and Willie Mays' catch in 54, but the film On the Waterfront, I'm almost certain, was a 1954 motion picture. And one of my favorite movies ever.
I wasn't as into baseball, so I can't say that I went to the library and checked those books out. It was all basketball.
Yeah.
Mostly basketball and occasionally. And then you get into some of the more modern stuff like, Jerry Kramer's book or Paper Lion.
Mm-hmm.
I Am Third.
Brian's song. Was made into Brian's song.
Right. Yeah. So those were the later in life, high school years for me. I just didn't do baseball. I did like it, though, and I was watch it because it was so rare to see, and a little bit of history on baseball, but more so the real early history, like, wow, the 1800s and the early 1900s for baseball were fascinating to me.
We have a busy week then, a busy set of shows, and looking forward to it here on the Joe Beaver Show. And today, a little less busy from a guest standpoint, our only guest booked, although I have a few other feelers out there, and we'll see if anything else hits. We'll be busier on that front as the week goes along. But Oregon State men's basketball head coach Wayne Tinkle coming up in a few minutes.
Great guest.
When we were over there the other day, we didn't have a chance. We watched practice, and I've been, going full immersion on Beaver men's hoops with the game that I broadcast last night, with another one Friday night against Weber State. We did the show last week from the Basketball Practice Center. I like this team, and I like this group. There was some nervousness for a while last night as the Beavers found themselves behind 47-44 with about 14 minutes to go. I'm kind of thinking, okay, fellas, let's kick back into the early gear that they were in, because I thought they got off to a really good start.
I got to say that I had to go. I had to. My body can't do it anymore, so I had to go.
You're up at 3 in the morning. I get it.
So I left just before that run, and I have to ask you, what happened? Because it was the Beavers were down, and I wake up to a 23-point victory.
I know. How about that?
I literally went through the play-by-play sheet to kind of see where the run was and what happened.
38-12 over the last 14 minutes, and it was impressive. It was thorough. It was dominant in all phases, primarily defensive pressure. They turned the game on defense.
Good.
They got some runouts, fast breaks, the sharing of the basketball. It's about as as a good, you know, when what did Sean's expression? Pepper and something about around the infield.
Oh yeah,
what was his term around
the infield.
You know,
he would say.
What was
it'll come back to me. It'll come back to me.
It all does.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
Yeah, that. But there was that. But there was also something about peppering the ball around the infield.
Well,
or
yeah,
like
you would just say that
around
the infield, because you just visualize the ball moving from right to left through several players' hands around the horn. But that was I had to ask my ex-father-in-law. Sells boats for a living. And I asked him one time, we were out to dinner. I said, what's around the horn mean? And it was me as a sports guy. And he's not a sports guy, even less than my own dad. But I knew he was a boat guy. I thought it might have something to do with boat. I'm like, what does around the horn mean? Because Bill Shonley says that all the time. And I got the full explanation. I mean, it makes sense. The horn is, South America and that's called the horn, and you got to go around the horn before they built the Panama Canal.
I laughed the other day when you and Dougie were talking about expressions that we only hear in sports that you wouldn't know if it wasn't for sports.
Yeah.
One of them was the great phrase, staved off elimination.
Yeah.
Now, in no other phase in life have you ever heard anybody at any point use that expression.
Right.
Well, I staved off my firing. I staved off whatever.
Never.
It's only staved off elimination.
Yes, yes. I have convinced my family that I'm really smart because I use big words.
Yeah.
I only heard them in sports.
Yeah, that made me laugh out loud when I was listening to you guys, because I just... That I thought, you know what? When have I ever used staved off in any other context than sports and an elimination?
And how did it come up? How did it get created for other uses? And then how did the one sports person use that? Because every sports cliche started with one guy.
But we got to find a way to use staved in a different context just to say we did and we can and that we use it properly. I need an H.L. Mencken as a guide or somebody. But he's not around.
That'll be
anymore.
One of those things that we, as a Joe Beaver family, ask you to work in.
Yeah, please today. In fact, today, humor us, please, because we have Wayne Tinkle coming up and open phones. Plenty of time to get to texts and calls. And in fact, if you'd like to jump in with anything right now before we bring the coach in, 541-497-5356. Did you go to the game? Did you watch the game? Did you listen to the game? A combination thereof. And if so, did anything in the game, kind of get you a little bit? Like, you know why? I kind of like it. Or, I'm still concerned about this, that, or the other, but I thought there was some really good basketball last night.
Oh, I'll tell you what I love. First impressions. Is it Fala or Fala?
Parsifala.
Okay, then Fala. Brian's saying it wrong.
Okay.
By the way, I did tweet out, great to see Brian Brooks back behind the microphone.
Yes. Yeah, it was so good to hear him again.
Yeah.
If any of you were there and have some quick reflections before we break and bring Wayne Tinkle in, this would be a good time to share those, to text them in. And somebody, please, Robert Hirsch, I'm talking to you, or Dave, or anybody else who can. Just, I'm curious. John and I both are. Staved. Can the word staved be used in anything other than a sporting context?
Yeah, I'd like to hear an example
of
that.
I mean, just...
But I've used it. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, the city council got together and we staved off that measure or whatever. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard it except when it comes to a team staving off elimination.
So
does the word have any other purpose in life other than to be used in that sporting
context? Now, Dave's on the phone. I'm going to guess he's going to say something along the lines of Meriwether Lewis staved off a particular attack.
But it's funny to me. He may. We'll go to Dave here in just a second. But I've never seen the word except in a sports
game. No, I haven't either.
Ever.
Never.
So if anybody can defy that, well, here, I'll give you one, then feel free.
Yeah.
Dave, good morning. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Good morning, fellas. Well, aren't the flats that form a barrel called staves?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. My headphones weren't working. Please repeat the question, Dave.
I think the long, thin flats that are kind of bound together to form a barrel, I think those are called staves.
Okay. That may be...
It's not the same thing. And in that case, you're kind of staving off the whiskey or the cider from flowing freely on the floor.
That may be. That may be its origins. I have no idea. I just know I've never heard it except when it comes to sports.
Well, I know you're up against it here, so I'll be quick. I was hoping that there would be some news this morning because Sarah couldn't make the show yesterday. I was disappointed, though I did stumble upon a John Wilder column where he had a long conversation with the athletic director of Boise State regarding what was the straw that stirred the drink of that new deal that brought the departing members of the Mountain West Conference in. And it was Pac-12 Enterprises. You know how much I like the technical aspects of your guys' industry. And there was an aspect in Wilner's column, as soon as I read it, it said, yes, that's right. I remember at the Oregon game, which was broadcast by Fox, mm-hmm. the big Fox,
mm-hmm.
there was this mammoth truck out on the parking lot on the west side of the stadium. Wilner's column refers to the fact that the Pac-12 Enterprises, when they do a broadcast, it's out of like a Hertz rental truck, as opposed to something Paul Blackburn would have hauled around mm-hmm. on an 18-wheeler. It's a more compact unit. And in fact, for Olympic sports like baseball, track, wrestling, or something like that, they have what's called air packs that allow the Pac-12 Enterprises to link up to the satellite and therefore go out into a larger universe of listeners and watchers. Are you guys at all conversant with those the mini trucks and or the air packs that the Pac-12 Enterprises is using to get their broadcast elements out over the airwaves?
I don't know about that, but it's so funny you bring this up, because last night as I'm walking into Gill Coliseum, there's one entryway where we have to go to get our press pass, at least for the first time, and it's in the back deep dark corner, and I walk past the truck that is where they park to you know, the TV truck, and I commented to myself, I talk to myself a lot, and I said, that's the biggest TV truck I've ever seen. It was a full-on, you know, trailer, 18-wheeler type trailer with a massive, where they come out, you know, from the walls, they come out. And I just thought, that is the biggest truck I've ever seen to do a broadcast. And then I just forgot about it and walked down the stairs and went into Gill.
But that was an ESPN unit that was probably conveying the signal, was it not?
Yes. Well, yeah, because it
wasn't that on ESPN Plus last night,
yes.
That broadcast?
Yes. Yes. Hey,
yeah.
That's
anyway,
Dave.
It's a small point, but I have one 1950s memory. I just want to scandalize you guys. I go back to 1952 because I was born earlier than that. But my furthest back sports memory involves 1952, Mike. I remember about 1957 or 58 coming upon one of my buddies had a 1952 Mickey Mantle Topps baseball card. And I still have a vivid memory. Oh, wow, look at that. By the way, one of those goes for about $150,000
mm-hmm.
on the auction market these days. So a couple of random thoughts. Have a good day, fellas.
Thanks, Dave.
We'll talk to you again later
yeah.
this week.
Now, I saw the article he's referring to. I saw,
was it behind the paywall?
The Pac-12 Enterprises feed story.
Yeah.
I mean, the Pac-12 Enterprise coming to the rescue, or at least being a big part of the rebuild. And so he gave a little bit of context to it, saying that the Boise State AD evidently said that was a selling point to jump over and be part of a rebuilt Pac-12, the Pac-12 Enterprises.
Hmm.
We had Michael Molinari on way back. It may be time to check in again with him this mm-hmm. week, perhaps. But I need to read the article first that Dave alluded to, and we plan on it. There's been so much else going on.
Yeah.
Basketball season is upon us, and I've been really immersed in trying to get ready for that. And we're going to talk to head coach Wayne Tinkle after a quick timeout. But if you also digested the Wilner piece relative to the Pac-12 Enterprise and say, well, here's what the guy said, and here's what he means, and this is why it was helpful in the it's being very helpful in the rebuild. If you already know about that and want to text us or call us, as we have open phones, and we have a lot of them today after head coach Wayne Tinkle. We'd love to hear from you. The coach is coming up next on the Joe Beaver Show. We continue on the Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren. We were both present last night watching the season opener. The Beavers end up winning, going away 80-57 with a 14-minute finish, 38-12, that was dominant in all phases and fun to watch. And even before then, early, with Parsifala doing his work down low and just so many things to really enjoy and like, DeMarco Minor rebounding like crazy, stripping for a run out for a Michael Ratai dunk. There were just a lot of elements to the game that were fun to watch.
Did you try D minor, or was it always just Paulo?
I think that's going to be your thing, D minor. You're going to have a Mozart, and he has artistic ability. I think D minor does. Some leadership ability, to be sure. The guy who, with his staff and players, have been working hard, and it's one game in. There's 30 left in the regular season and then beyond, but we'd love to get the thoughts of the man himself, head coach Wayne Tinkle. And, coach, congratulations on getting out 1-0 as you watched it unfold, and you probably already looked at every play on video and so on. What are your thoughts about the way your guys came out in the season opener?
Yeah, thanks. Good to be with you guys. You're always early in the season. You see the negative things before the positive, but we keep reminding ourselves the fact that we have so many new guys. But it's going to take time. And you saw a very game opponent in Utah Tech. And, I like that we were able to establish, after we kind of got an even start and maybe even down a point, built a 10-point lead. In our exhibition game and our scrimmage, we haven't closed the halves. And we kind of let them get back in it a little bit at the end of the first. And then they came out, took the lead in the second half. But what I really loved is we had guys in the huddles and the timeouts saying, hey, everybody calm down. We're good. Let's get it fixed. We're fine. No panic. And then you saw us just kind of put the our feet on the pedal there, so to speak. And I think our depth has a big part in that. You could see that they were running out of gas. Our intensity picked up. And really, the only disappointing thing is when we got going offensively, it was kind of like, okay, now it's my turn, kind of deal. And not selfishly, but just wanting to get us over that hump. And so video with the team is going to be great, where we show those moments where we sputter a little bit by either not getting into something quick enough or the ball sticking. But, man, didn't happen very often. We really shared the ball, moved the ball. I thought passed up good shots for even better ones. And then at halftime, we challenged the guys to hold them under 25 points in the second half. And they come out and score, I think, 14 in the first eight, maybe 16. Mm-hmm. And we said in a timeout, we can still hit our goal. And we missed it by 1 point, holding them to 57. And they scored 26 in the second half. So defensively, we really clamped down, and that allowed us to get out in transition. And like we've talked, we feel like we've got a team this year that can get out and run. We didn't shoot it as well as we're going to, or that we have been, but we know, that's going to take care of itself. So a lot of positives, but some good things to work on as well.
Head coach Wayne Tinkle joining us. John, the expression came to me, Bill Shonley, the great voice of the Blazers, used to say, whipping the ball around the infield.
That was it.
Whipping the ball around the infield.
Which set up Lilavish's only basket.
Well,
it was a whip around the infield.
Yeah, it really was, coach, wasn't it? And LT himself also had that sense and knack how to give the ball up. Everybody seemed to be on page in terms of the unselfishness you've been talking about, the guys playing together and for each other.
No, for sure. And it's been a neat thing to see develop, I think even at times they call themselves out when maybe there's a little bit too much dribbling or over dribbling, but the willingness, and you saw LT was frustrated. There's a couple of calls, and watching him, poor kid looked picked on a little bit, but his first game in the United States, he comes in, hits that first three, next two didn't go in. But I remember a play out of a timeout in the second half when he slipped a screen. We hit him. His look was either for shot for Parsa or shooter in the corner, and without hesitating, the corner defender rotated to him, and he snapped it right to Nate King's for his only three. in that moment when they had taken the lead and we just started coming back. I thought that was a big play and a heady play by him. And Parsifala, how about his passing out of the post? He had a nice wraparound dump off for Mike in the second half, but then three skip passes for three threes, and then his ability to score it in there. You know, that's something we've missed. You know, some true low post back to the basket guys that you know are going to score it at a 55% clip or better. So love the inside out balance as well.
Is he 6'9" or 6'7"?
He's Parson. As big as he needs to be, John.
Well, the only reason why I ask is because he looked like a forward, but he's your low post guy, and he was dominant in there, but he was so smooth. He has perhaps the best moves around the basket to score smooth wise than a post player you've had in a while.
Yeah, he's really got good footwork, and he's strong as an ox. So, you know, he was wearing those guys out by ducking and sealing. And he uses that footwork against bigger guys. Let's settle at 6'8". We'll call it 6'8".
Yeah. Good compromise.
But he's got great footwork and awareness. Like you know, so many big players these days, we work with our guys are uncomfortable using the backboard, and so there's a lot of things that we do in individual work to get them comfortable. Because, you know, you use that square, you can see it out of the corner of your eye. You know, I'm always saying, you know, the backboard's your best friend. And he's a guy that knows how to get it quickly up on the glass and with good touch before bigger guys can come over and challenge and contest.
Yeah. Coach, you know, we've talked about the number of players you have, and they're new, and they're from Europe and all of that. And we will continue to do that because that's most of your team. But I don't want to get lost in the shuffle about the importance of Michael Ratai sticking around and how important he is and was in last night's win.
No, for sure. I mean, he's right now is really kind of the heart and soul, you know, and we've been pretty honest, you know, with, you know, some of his closest friends, guys he came in with as a freshman, you know, here's a guy coming from Germany, long ways from home. And he really got close with guys like Tyler Bilodeau, Jordan Pope, even Casey Obekwe was his roommate. And, you know, he was kind of down in the dumps for a while when, you know, those guys left and, you know, we made some tough decisions with, you know, some other guys that wanted bigger roles. And we thought maybe, you know, that would happen somewhere else. And he was, you know, kind of wallowing a little bit there for a while. And then, you know, we assured him, Mike, listen, we're not going to lose focus from the things we told you about bringing you guys in, you know, adding talent as the years go on. And then when you're junior and senior, you know, we're going to do big things, you know, get back to where we need to be. We're still on course, but trust us that we're going to get the guys that you're going to enjoy playing with, that you're going to understand are going to make us better. And I think those guys coming in, the work we put in over the summer and here early in the fall, I think it's really given him a confidence, you know, that, okay, you know what? I can lead this group. I see the potential. And so the last month has really settled in and gotten excited. And we're seeing some of that enthusiasm again. And let's face it, he was less than 100% all year last year. Him being healthy again, I mean, you saw more pop in his legs last night, you know, than you saw all of last year. And so it's great to have him healthy and in a good mindset to help lead this group here early in this young season.
Head coach Wayne Tinkle joining us on the Joe Beaver Show. You talk about Mike Ratai's leadership and the veteran quality that he brings, but a new guy that I thought did so many things well last night, Coach, that you found via the portal and from the United States of America, DeMarco Minor, a kid out of Chicago, Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. But what a balanced sheet, in a sense, he gave you and contributed in so many ways. Tell us a little bit about Polo, as he's called, how you kind of found him, and you want to coach guys that buy in, gritty, tough guys. Boy, he sure seems to be that.
He is. You know, the coaches did a great job when we were in the portal. We were looking for a tough, hard-nosed point guard that would run the show, obviously set the tone defensively, and then be a guy that could be a playmaker offensively, run our system, but then, you know, have the ability to score when he has those opportunities as well. And, you know, we were blessed with, you know, good scoring point guard the last couple of years, but we needed more of a team-oriented or team-minded guy that could be inspirational in huddles or when times, you know, get tough. There's some adversity out there. And you know, Polo's been great. Now, I'll tell you, over the summer, you know, there were times where he would just kind of fly off the handle because he always plays so hard and he demands it from everybody else. And he had to kind of learn how to deliver those messages, you know, in a positive way. And you know, we tell him, listen, if it's a lack of effort, that's one thing. You know, go ahead and, you know, pat him on the butt and bark to get him going. But, you know, if there's mistakes being made just because of lack of experience and that sort of thing, you know, find a way to get them to give you their best. And some guys, if you jump down their throat, you know, they aren't capable of doing that. So I really give him a lot of credit for making that change in his personality and approach. You know, I mean, you saw it last night. I had to calm him down. He screamed at a guy for passing up an open shot.
Right,
you know,
right.
And you know, that's a good thing. You just got to find the right way to say it so that guy's confident the next time. But his leadership's great. You know, it was really, really neat. You know, he was 3 for 9 at halftime. And I just kind of said, hey, let's start to build up that assist column a little bit. And, you know, we joked that Parsa had more assists at the center spot than he did at the point. But he knew we needed some scoring when we got in that lull, especially in the second half. You know, he hits a pull-up jumper. I think he got to the rim and then, you know, hit 3 threes that really opened that thing up. And I think that does a lot for his confidence because we watched his stroke in all the video when we were recruiting him. And I asked him why, you know, this is before he got out here. We're still recruiting him. I said, why do you think you shot only 30% from three? And he said, coach, the ball, I had a lot at the end of the shot clock. I had to jack up shots and that sort of thing. And so we talked about how that happens, you know, that maybe guys are passing up good shots early in the clock or sputtering around. You know, if you run good stuff, you should get, you know, you shouldn't be in those situations all night long. But the point was, you've got a good stroke, take good threes and that percentage will go up. And he's really focused on that. You know, he's a drive first guy, look to get to the rim or kick it. But I think as the season goes on, as we're really early here, he's going to become an even more confident shooter. And teams, you know, going to have a hard time guarding him in pick and roll and open space situations because of his ability to get downhill and to shoot it.
Was it just me or were you more relaxed? I saw you sitting comfortably more than normal.
Well, you're not the only one that noticed, and I don't know that I necessarily made a point of it, but you know, we've got a lot of new guys, and you know, there was probably some nerves and jitters at practice Saturday. I shared this with Mike in the pregame. I had to get after him multiple times, more than I have to this point, and it was more just the trying to alert them to the fact that it counts for real now, and that we're going to be facing opponents that we can't take lightly and can't coast. We can't have moments in games where we coast. I guess that's as gentle as I can put it. And so during the game, I just said, you know what, this is game one. These guys have got to learn to play themselves, you know, through some tough times. I almost didn't call that timeout to start the second half because I wanted to see how they would respond. And just, you know, it was really just trying to keep them in a good mindset, coach them up. A couple times when we had to, you know, get after them, we did. But, you know, I don't know that that's going to be something I can do all year long. but you know, we really do have to kind of sit back and let these guys learn who each other, you know, who they are and you know, play through some of these lulls. And then there's going to be times when, sure, we're going to have to use timeouts and coach them through those moments. But I thought it was key that we just kind of let them play and let them figure some things out in game one. And, we, you know, we'll obviously try to adjust accordingly moving forward.
Last couple of things with head coach Wayne Tinkle following the Beavers' 80-57 win over a tough Utah Tech team last night. Coach, again, there's just not enough time to go over all of the contributions you got and jumps people have made, but There were some exciting moments, even to the end. I loved how the guys finished. It's not like they took possessions off because of the big lead, and you get run-out dunks for new guys in Maxime and in Johan. And guys, I know the whole team seemed excited about that.
Yeah, you know, I had a couple buddies that came to town and sat behind the bench, and one in particular, my buddy JR, always watches the bench, you know, and judges body language, and he said that they were awesome. You know, we've got a lot of guys, you know, and it's going to be tough. We can't play them all, and so we've got to make sure to show love to those guys and make sure they're keeping their chins up, you know, and encouraging them to try to get better every day in practice. But you know, we learned a little bit from the Billings game, you know, where, you know, if teams are pressing up, listen, we don't want to run it up, not embarrass anybody, but, you know, if teams are pressing up, we want to always be on attack mode until that final horn. It was great to see Maxime come in, blocks a shot. You know, they went to their full court press, which, you know, they're going to fight to the end, and we executed it perfectly. JoJo shot middle, got the pass out of the trap, looked up the floor, and, you know, Max had a big-time dunk, and then, you know, the next possession, you saw Johan contest the three in the corner. He boxed out, saw that we got the rebound, and he can run. For a seven-footer, I'm telling you, he wins a lot of our sprints. He took off like a gazelle, it was Isaiah. Baseball pass from darn near the baseline hit him right in stride. It was great to see that, you know, our guys can get out and run and be in attack mode and finish it off like that. And it was really neat to see those two freshmen, their first two buckets as Beavers, you know, transition dunks. I mean, I think they couldn't draw it up any better. And it was great to see the enthusiasm everybody shared from those plays.
Let's close with a thought on a guy that I interviewed on our postgame show afterwards. Just a delight to be able to do that after a game, in Nate Kings. First of all, just the game itself that he has, Coach, and that lithe but wiry, strong body, the physical. I mean, he doesn't look like it, but he's really, on first glance, but he's physical. He's tough, and he can do a lot of things, and he did a lot of things for you last night. How great was it to have him back and healthy, making that kind of contribution?
Oh, it was just so happy for him. First off, he's an unbelievable kid. Been through a lot in his young life, and then, you know, the excitement he had coming here and playing for us last year, to have that taken away with the ACL injury, you know, just seems like a lot's been thrown at him, and he worked his tail off. Got to give credit to our former athletic trainer, Nick Byes, and, you know, Joseph, our new trainer, and Chandler Strength and Conditioning for getting him back. And what I love, he's been shooting lights out. He didn't do that last night. We know he will. But the confidence he has now in that strength in the knee, we've really only seen it the last few weeks, driving to the hole. Mm-hmm. He had some tough finishes, some great moves. So he's not a one-dimensional guy, just a shooter. He's going to be able to put it on the deck, get to the rim. You know, we're going to be able to post him up in some of our actions because he does have a knack for, you know, getting that thing down there and getting it up on the backboard and finishing. And he's a great free throw shooter too. So he gets in there and gets fouled, you know he's going to convert. But you're just happy for him because of who he is, what he stands for. He's so excited to be back in his home state representing the Beavers. And we know he's going to continue to leave his imprint on our games on both ends. You know, he's a capable defender. He's a little mad a couple times. He got beat to a guy's strong hand. But he's going to continue to work and develop. He's a great kid, great teammate. His teammates love him because there's never any nonsense from him. And you'll see how much we missed him as this year goes on. I think it's going to be good for him that he had a year to kind of take everything in, you know, and we got to remind ourselves he hasn't played in 2 years, so there might be some moments where, you know, he's not his best. But before long, it's going to start clicking on both ends for him, and he's going to be an easy one for Beaver Nation to support and rally behind.
Well, Beaver Nation clearly enjoyed themselves last night. The crowd was really into it at the end, watching all the things that we've talked about, a lot of things we haven't even talked about that were fun to watch, Coach. One in, a long way to go, but it's a great way to start. And we'll see you Friday night against Weber State. We appreciate the time, Coach, as always. Thanks for joining us.
All the best, guys. Yep, thanks for having me, and we'll see you Friday. Go Beavs.
Thanks, Wayne.
Head Coach Wayne Tinkle, let's take a break. Open phones, text the rest of the way. We're going to stave it off until 1 o'clock. We'd love to hear from you. Use it in a sentence, please. 497-5356. Good to have you with us on the Joe Beaver Show.
Yeah, we don't need to worry about flooded vehicles right now.
Enjoyed that conversation with head coach Wayne Tinkle. Good to have you with us on the Joe Beaver Show. Open phones and text the rest of the way. Now, we do have other guests along the way this week. I just consulted my text line during the break. Nothing new to report today. So that gives us plenty of opportunity, I hope, to interact and engage on the text line about whatever may be occurring to you with respect. I do throw out what Dave called about the John Wilner column. Now, perhaps at noon, here in a few minutes, during the top of the hour, I will find that column about Pac-12 Enterprises and read it.
Yeah.
Now, if it can be done during the course of the break, it tells me a couple of things, that it's not necessarily a Carrie Eggers story. The long-form features, which are brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, so informative and good. Or it's not necessarily a Jason Quick, the Athletic long-form piece. If the Wilner piece is what I think it is, based on Dave teasing it, it may be more akin to the Jeff Goldblum doctrine. I think why he quit in The Big Chill. The Big Chill's okay.
Never saw it.
Lawrence Kasdan, I think, directed it. It's got an ensemble cast. It's pretty good. Kevin Costner was cast as the dead man. They originally were going to have him speak a few lines in flashback form, but people were gathering for his funeral, and Kevin Costner was played the person who had died that they were gathering for.
I didn't know.
But he didn't get his lines in. It's a little before Kevin had really hit his time and stride. So that was his role, the dead man, with no lines, as it turned out. But in it, somebody said, why'd you quit writing at the magazine? Something to that effect. This is going way back. And his answer, he says, well, as you and I yesterday, John, were talking about what constitutes a good broadcast. And you know, people say, well, you got all the reads and the spots and all the mentions, and that was a good broadcast.
Which is true.
Goldblum said, his publisher and editor said, your pieces are too long. You need to write pieces that people can read in the time that it takes to take an average, and I'll just leave it at that. And Goldblum said, it was about that time that I realized I need to do something else, because I don't want my life reduced to writing stories and columns within the time frame with that image in my head.
Yes.
Okay. So, nevertheless, the image, the imagery, the line, the thought has stayed with me forever about journalistic pieces, magazine pieces, and so on. And I believe the Wilner piece might fall into line with what Jeff Goldblum's editor and publisher was looking for in The Big Chill. I'm hoping to find out. But if in the meantime you've read it, consumed it, digested it, and want to share some thoughts about it based on what Dave said with the respect to the Pac-12 Enterprises playing an important role in the Pac-12 rebuild. We've been hearing that it might, and the resources available within the Pac-12 Enterprises and studio and infrastructure and all of that could play a part, and a significant part. It sounds as though, based on what Dave said, that the Boise State AD said just that. Now, that's what intrigues me, and I kind of want to dive into it a little bit more.
It is intriguing because you wonder, okay, that was it? That was, you know,
part of it. Yeah.
Accessibility to cameras and
stuff.
I
don't know.
It's like,
I want to see.
You're going to throw in those cameras and a couple of games?
Yeah,
all right.
We'll come to your conference.
Yeah. We're in.
Yeah. So I just want to see what the upshot is.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to do that when we break during this 5-minute little segment, and then return to open phones and texts about men's basketball, about women's hoops on the road. Ron Callen, you talk about J.B. Long, who will join us Thursday, and we have soccer coaches, both the men's and women's soccer coaches, coming up this week. We have a couple of other guests invited to join us on the show, but I want to find out a little bit more about Callen's schedule. He's going to be in Colorado Springs on Friday and be on the sidelines for the Beavers Saturday afternoon. That's good work. See you next hour.
They're coming from everywhere.
Seems to be a great deal of traffic here for country roaders, think.
You blew your Corvallis, Oregon.
To see the total eclipse of the sun.
Hard to tell the nighttime from the day.
I'm talking about the sky, McIntyre.
Mike McIntyre and the Buffaloes are coming, amongst many others.
Need to be a great deal of traffic here for country road, I think.
Sight worth seeing. I know how you must feel.
Yes, but not everyone's on board.
And look at that sky.
You look at it.
But for everyone else, excitement is sky high for life in Corvallis.
The skies are amazing.
There seems to be a lot happening in it all the time.
If it's happening, you'll hear about it on the Joe Beaver Show.
I'm expecting something special from there. Keep your eyes skinned. I want reports.
Oh, you'll get reports, all right. The best reports on the Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
Nothing I can say, a total eclipse of the heart.
And away we go with the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Well, I found it, and I think Jeff Goldblum would have been proud to write an article. It's longer than I expected, and I haven't been able to finish it yet, but it's very good about the Pac-12 enterprises. If you'd care to join us, open phones and text. John says there are some texts coming in, which we'll get to in a moment, but the Downward Dog phone line is also available. Any thoughts? If you went to the men's basketball game last night, if you have any thoughts about the Beavers in San Jose State, about the return to the gridiron this weekend and what you're expecting, are you okay with now fighting and fighting for a win come Saturday? And then the following week, I think I said Colorado Springs, Ron Callen's going to Fort Collins. We'll be back in time for the football broadcast Saturday. So he's got a quick turnaround, but a true pro. He'll be able to call the women's game in Fort Collins and not many hours later be on the sidelines for the San Jose State game. Then it's off. He won't be going, but it's off to Colorado Springs then the following week against Air Force. Do you win the next 2 weeks, get bowl eligible? And does that I don't think in talking to many in Beaver Nation, there seems to be a sense, John, of, I don't know if it's resignation. I don't know if it's, just an adjustment of expectation or whatever else. Early in the year, there was bowl talk of, hey, can you stay in the conversation in November in those last two games? And I mean, the conversation for being talked about like Washington State and Boise State have been talked about. Yeah. Can you be that kind of team winning that? And I thought there was a chance to. I thought the Beavers sitting at 4-1 would get to 6-1.
Yeah, a lot of people did.
And the Cal game, yeah, you know. I mean, injuries, other things, just the reality of sorts setting in. But can you readjust? Have you recalibrated enough to be excited to see the Beavers beat San Jose State, get back on track, go find a way to win another game on the road the next week and be bowl eligible, and then take your chances with the Cougs at home and then go to Boise and see what unfolds there? And are you okay with all of it? What are some of your thoughts about it off the bye week, as I'm sure you've had a chance to take a deep breath, sigh, relax a little bit, and now get back into the fight as a fan? That's what we're all about. I know that. And what Beaver Nation's all about. Your thoughts on men's hoops or anything else you'd like to share, 541-497-5356. And I do have the Wilner column in front of me, and I'll share a couple of pertinent paragraphs from it, but I still haven't been able to finish the entire thing. But Dave, thank you for bringing it to our attention today, last hour. It is something that I saw across my feed a while back and just haven't been able to get to until that high noon break. Everett, I know, was at the game last night. Everett Hartman sitting behind the Beaver bench. So, Everett, it was great to see you there. You had a good seat, a good view of what went on. I don't know what if that's exactly what you're calling about, but it's good to have you on, Coach. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Mike, for stopping by and saying hi to me. I really appreciated that. I attended practice last Friday, and I was really impressed. I really, really like this group that Wayne has. I thought the defensive emphasis in practice was a significant change from past years. They are really trying to push the ball down the floor and attack in transition and early offense, which I think is just where college and pro basketball and even high school basketball is at in this age. I really, really like the DeMarco Minor kid. He is just Chicago tough. His defensive ability to pressure the ball is going to be a significant factor for the Beavers this year. And overall, I think defensively they are much, much better. I also really like the kid from McNary Nate Kings.
Yes.
The young man can score at all three levels. He can shoot the three. He can get to the rim and finish. He can pull up. As Wayne said in his interview, he didn't particularly do that well last night. But in practice, one of the first things I noticed was the DeMarco kid defending and then Nate's ability to score. I just am really impressed with those two. Fala, I think he posts up very, very well. I think he does a really good job of using his body to seal his defender and then the easy drop step to lay it in or the turn middle and jump hook. I think he's going to be really good. And overall, I think all of their bigs are just more athletic and faster than they've been in the past. I know that Wayne said that he's got one that wins a lot of practice, and that doesn't surprise me at all. These kids can all run. I think they're very, very athletic. They're very competitive. I thought, as you mentioned earlier, that the chemistry on the bench and the way the kids reacted and interacted amongst themselves was just real, real positive. I think the new assistant coach, Chris Haslam, I think is his name, does a really good job with the bigs during his breakdown position session in practice. My only, and this is a minor thing, guys, but my only thing I was a little concerned with was long shots cause long rebounds. And there were some times where some balls hit the front rim or back rim and bounded out to 8-10 feet. And
yeah.
Some of our guys tended to just step towards the rim instead of going and at least checking and finding to put it. I mean, sometimes you got to screen somebody off at the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's something that will be addressed and they will get better. But I'm just really, really excited about this group. And I think Beaver Nation should come out and support them and be a little more invested in this group. And hopefully we'll see some bigger crowds as the year goes on. And I'm just really, really happy for Wayne and his staff.
Yeah, they've done a heck of a job, Everett. I know, you know, what are you guys, you think you're going to the Final Four now? I mean, you're 1-0 and you beat Utah Tech. Yeah, I know. And I'm not going to pump the brakes on your enthusiasm and, in a sense, exhorting Beaver Nation to come out and be part of this, because I think, Everett, do you concur with me that by the end of that game, and not even by the end, early on, I almost felt like those that were there in a smallish gathering of announced at 2,500 on a Monday night. It's not the easiest night to draw and so on. But I thought there was almost almost a murmur through the crowd. Oh, I like that. Oh, I like that. Oh, I like this. Oh, I like that. Did you feel that too, that those that were there, yourselves and others, were kind of really getting into it as the thing went along?
Oh, absolutely, Mike. In fact, after I watched practice on Friday, I talked to Wayne for just, 5 minutes or so, and he goes, well, and I said, Coach, I'm impressed. You're getting after it defensively. You have more talent. Your bigs are much more athletic. And I saw it, and I told him, I said, I know it's a small sample size, but I said, after one practice, I'm really, really encouraged. Mm-hmm. And so after last night, I would, back that feeling up and those statements up. I thought that they did some really good things. I was pleasantly surprised, I guess, Mike, is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And I thought the crowd was too. And, we don't really know that much about Utah Tech, but I think they're pretty competitive. Mm-hmm. I thought the kid from Jesuit High School played pretty
well. Yes, he did.
He had some other pretty solid players. They're certainly not a Gonzaga
no.
or somebody like that. But at the same time, this early in the season, the ability now to use that effort last night and go into practice and go into film and start building on that. You know, we talk so much about momentum in football week to week, and you get the same thing in the game of basketball. And the kids start believing, they start really, I mean, they always listen, but you know what I mean? They really listen and they really start to apply things, and they're so encouraging of each other. I was just really, really impressed. And like I said earlier, no one's more deserving than Wayne and his staff. They've had some tough times.
Yes.
And I think this team's going to surprise some people.
I agree, man. Hey, good to see you, Everett, and good to talk to you. Thanks for making the call today. Friday night, Weber State's going to present a much – I mean, if you win that game and get out to 2-0, Weber State's picked to contend for the Big Sky title, picked second in most of the preseason prognostications that I've seen. They're good. So Friday night's going to be another good test. And I look forward to seeing it unfold. Thanks, Everett, for making time for us. We appreciate it.
You bet.
That's Everett Hartman, joining us, as is Mike on the Downward Dog phone line. If you'd like to join us, open phones, 541-497-5356, and some text we'll get to here in a moment, as well as best I can, a summary of the Pac-12 Enterprises article, which was indeed enticing to the Boise State AD out of his own mouth. We'll get to that here in a moment. Let's go to Mike on the Joe Beaver Show. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, Mike. I wanted to tell you, we got new seats. Thank you, Sarah. We are about 12 rows up above you to your right. It's awesome. I mean, these guys, all I can say is, you know, I go the practice and talk to coach, and these guys are fun to watch. I didn't really see a tail off of almost anybody that came off the bench. These guys all worked together. In the past, you had a team that, you know, didn't like each other, didn't work together. Holy cow! I met DeMarco's mom. I welcomed her to Beaver Nation, and she was very upbeat and said, "He's got to earn. You know, he's got to earn his right." And it was just the best thing I've seen. And I know Coach does the right thing. He doesn't take shortcuts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mike, I just thought that this was the best thing I've seen in Beaver basketball in quite a while.
Mike, it's great to hear from you. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. I'm glad you're there. We'll see you Friday night, I hope, again. Thanks for joining us on the Joe Beaver
Show. Not to get out too front of it.
I know. There's some people right now who say, well,
I know. But it's just, it's having seen, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, just looking at a certain group, this is the first where we're like excited because they have skill. They have individual skill. They like each other. So that's not going to be a problem. And they're working the offense. And the offense wasn't just pass it around and then launch a three because you had to. It was actually
good movement,
some backdoor
cutting,
stuff,
screening.
Cutting, screening. And you know, it starts, I think, with Fala underneath.
Mm-hmm.
His ability to pass out of the low post is incredible. And from post to post,
right.
He'll do some wraparound stuff.
Yeah.
I like what I saw in that respect. I think guys are going to have to get used to the fact that those passes are going to be there. I don't think they expected a couple of them.
Before we break, a couple of things. I'm going to share from Wilner, and then we'll get to some text, then we'll break, and we have the rest of the hour. Thanks for joining us today. Wilner wrote this recently. The rebirth of the Pac-12 began with the death of its football scheduling partnership with the Mountain West. And he goes on to talk a little bit about that. Escalation is not the same as a culmination, he writes. Boise State needed to know more about whether to jump over. So did the other schools initially targeted by the Pac-12, San Diego State, Fresno State, and Colorado State. What could be expected from a media deal? How would college football playoff revenue be distributed? How would the Pac-12's considerable financial assets be deployed? The war chest, so
yeah.
To speak. Pac-12 commissioner, here's where it gets interesting and what Dave was calling about with respect to the AD at Boise State, Jeremiah Dickey. Pac-12 Commissioner Teresa Gould and her expansion consultants provided the answers and went one step beyond, which, by the way, an underrated series hosted by John Newland, I believe, on television in the 60s. Kind
never
of scary,
of
one step beyond. Anyway, they pitched the four schools on the hidden potential of the Pac-12 Enterprises, the technological infrastructure and production unit that supported the now-defunct Pac-12 networks.
Mm-hmm.
Boise State officials liked what they heard, Wilner writes. Quote, I'm bullish, Jeremiah Dickey said, the AD at Boise State. I see a lot of value in that. We're big on telling our story and streaming and what's coming. I feel like Pac-12 Enterprises gives us the opportunity to be on the front end of creating something that could be epic, unquote. The Pac-12 networks went dark as a media distribution company this summer, but the cutting-edge technology and visionary engineers remained in place. In fact, Pac-12 Enterprises, writes Wilner, based in San Ramon, was already under contract to produce Wazoo and OSU football games for the CW. As Gould and her consultants explained as they made their pitch, the production unit could do the same for the Mountain West schools if they joined the conference. Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and San Diego State would have the ability to produce high-quality events at low cost, hundreds of events from any venue on campus or off. quote, something of that kind gets lost. Something that kind of gets lost with people is the Pac-12 Enterprises, the San Diego State AD says, J.D. Wicker. It's a massive asset that is sitting there that was, quite frankly, a big reason why we considered this.
I never thought of it as that big a deal. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe those cameras and all of that infrastructure.
And the ability to produce events.
Really hard, at
a low cost.
To put in, which it's just sitting there. I think they should be using it now. They should be recording things. I mean, if you go to the Pac-12 website, it's not bad. It's fine. It's the two schools, and but they don't have things on the website they used to have. For example, a Pac-12 release. Yes, it's only for two teams, but you can do some stuff. And they don't have, like, stats and facts and figures and history and archives and all those things just because the other teams are gone. They still own the information, don't they?
The intellectual property and all that. Yeah, they do. You know, here's what we should do is talk to, again, Michael Molinari, one of the key figures in the Pac-12 Enterprises, and kind of, okay, because what these ADs are saying from the schools that listen to Teresa Gould in the pitch, the Pac-12 Enterprises played not the only part, but a significant part in saying yes to coming over and being part of a rebuilt Pac-12. Yeah. We'll see, maybe from an insider at the Pac-12 Enterprises, such as Michael, okay, you know, what is it? What is it that they're really excited about? And did you know going in that this was going to be as big of an asset as it was? Yeah. Because it almost sounds like people are a little bit like, oh, there's more. Not just a media deal, not just a war chest. This thing called the Pac-12 Enterprises.
Yeah, and to get him to explain really what it is. I mean, is it a couple trucks? I mean, things that you can't get. Because you have to ask yourself, okay, why can't the Mountain West just get that and compete with it? And it must be a huge deal that you really can't.
Terribly costly to get all of that in place.
Yeah.
So the Pac-12 networks no more and was always sort of considered an albatross in a sense. Like, what? The network, it's not producing or delivering what it was supposed to. And in an odd kind of way, and Wilner even says ironically, the thing that people considered a debit, in a sense, to the conference and holding the conference back, and maybe it did in some ways the way things were operating and so on, is now appearing to be an essential part of a rebuild because it did always have some value in it that is now maybe being exploited fully in a way that it hadn't before.
Well, it might be a giant...
Out of necessity.
It might be a giant Bruno Kirby where someone... Because the Pac-12 was mocked. Yes, Larry Scott was mocked.
In.
All of it, and then he comes back. Larry Scott comes back and says, see?
Or, I think, apologize.
Yeah,
no, I don't know if we're ever going to get to that point.
No, but it kind of looks that way. It looks like, hey, you had some value here.
Yeah. And Teresa Gould using that value wisely.
Yeah.
And apparently it's part of the play and the pitch to prospective teams and schools. And if San Diego State's AD and Boise State, and I know the West Coast Regional and all of that, and then...
Yeah,
you may say, okay, yeah, they're going to play the game and say these types of things. But I wonder then if it adds to the pitch and the value if you are talking to Memphis or maybe even reconsider reconnecting with UNLV. You know what? That does all sound pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll see.
They'll do that. I would re-ask if we have it already. Why aren't they using it now and just putting stuff up on the website?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think maybe we're talking two different things, the website and Pac-12. I'm not sure, John. You know, that's something we need to clarify. Let's take a break and then get to text, we promise. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for contributing to both the Downward Dog phone line and University Honda text line on the Joe Beaver Show. Free the rest of the day. Some good guests coming in the next couple of days on the Joe Beaver Show.
1240.
Radio. All right, shall we get to some texts?
Yes, please. On the University Honda text line.
I will go most recent to oldest, and these are all in reaction to things that we say. So here's a text that said, ooh, this is from Jesse, Dean from Eugene's son. I love to see the experience from the Beaver Squad and the newcomers having a floor general like DeMarco. With the experience he has is huge. DeMarco brings a defensive energy that the rest of the team fed off of. Also, a backup point guard like Josiah is something we haven't had for a while. I loved Jordan Pope. P.S. He struggled in his debut last night for Texas.
Did he?
I didn't even know. But DeMarco led the team with a calming presence last night. I'm excited for Fala, Kings, Cy, and LT. I haven't been this excited for a Beaver basketball team and the potential of a team in a while. The depth we have is impressive. Kudos to the staff for their efforts on the recruiting trail. Also, Tyler Bilodeau had a big game last night for UCLA, and I'm happy for him. Go Beavs.
Did he? I watched a little bit of that game. I haven't studied the box score. Who they're playing Ryder. Did you catch a box score. I saw Tyler playing a little bit. I like Tyler Bilodeau a lot. I like Jordan Pope a lot. I like these kids. But the makeup of this team and this roster, with due respect to those guys, who I liked them as players and I liked them as people. I like this overall mix and group better.
Wow, Bilodeau started.
He started for Mick Cronin at UCLA.
He started at UCLA, scored 18 points and had 6 rebounds.
What was he? Did he have his field goal percentage?
9 for 16, 0 for 3 from 3, 0 for 1 from the line.
Good for him, though. Good. It's nice. I like Tyler.
He had a block.
And that's a guy, you know, it's a story. It's a story that, you know, the Beavers, I mean, he was under-recruited, and now he's starting at UCLA after developing here. And so there's some pain and twinge involved in it.
Oh, yeah.
Not as much as in football, you know, all of that. But there still is some element of that.
I had a little twinge when I looked up and saw WCC on the free throw line.
Yeah, it was a bit odd.
I was like, that's right. We've been relegated.
Part of the WCC, but tell you what, the WCC may have the best team in the country this year.
Oh, did you see what they did to Baylor?
106-63.
And they were 6-8. So you're going, sixth ranked Gonzaga hosting eighth ranked Baylor. Big matchup, big show. Boom, 30 point.
How about that?
Barrage.
Yeah.
Holy
shit. Was it 106-63?
Yeah. Well, I'll
I think it was something like
but
that.
But it was 101, I think.
101-63. That's gigantic.
Let me see. Top 25. And Kansas won, by the way. They have a home. Oh, season opening home winning streak. Wayne has 11, by the way, 11 out of his 11 years. He's won his season opener if it's at home. But Kansas hasn't lost at home in their season opener since 1972.
Yes.
101-63.
So nearly a 40-point blowout win, Gonzaga. And they're
19
coming
at halftime. And I said earlier this morning, this team's coming to Gil.
Mark Few in his 26th year. Anyway, thank you, Jesse, for the text. What else do you got on the fan?
All right, I got a bunch here. Okay. Bruce from Beaverton here with a question. Is Josiah Lake now JoJo Lake?
He's being called that a lot. Yeah, they call him JoJo all the time.
Do you?
Every once in a while, yes.
Are you being too familiar?
Well, you heard me last night refer to Polo Minor.
You did.
But I also called him DeMarco, and, you know, I called LT, Lataris, Lella Vicious. And I'm not Isaiah Sy, is known as Zay, you know, Isaiah. So, hey, Zay, good pass. I mean, I'm not sure I'm going to say Zay over to LT, get it to JoJo.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure I'm going to do that. But I may be a little too familiar at times and call Josiah Lake II JoJo.
I'm just pushing your buttons.
Thank you.
Also, I know he played, but don't see him in the box score. How did he do? Well, I'll tell you.
Who?
Josiah Lake. He was
got some rebounds.
26 minutes, 2 for 6 from the field, 4 rebounds, 4 fouls, 4 assists,
yes,
and 7 points. Not bad. Not a bad line at all.
No, and he defended pretty well, too.
Here's another one. Watched the guys last night. They look good. Very pleasantly surprised. Okay. I'm wondering how many people were there on these texts versus ESPN+.
When you say watching it, I wonder what they
mean.
I'm going
to get ESPN Plus because almost all the women and all the men are on there. So you might as well. It'd be a good
investment.
Wayne, 65 in Albany, class of 65. I was born in 65, Wayne, by the way. A vertical plank or post, I believe that the phrase staving off may have come from the Romans staving off their encampment every night while in the field. Interesting.
That sounds reasonable.
We have several staving.
Sounds like Dave said something to that effect.
Yeah, we have several about staving, but again,
I don't hear it. It's used commonly in sports vernacular.
Yes,
they stave. You know, the Edmonton Oilers staved off elimination with their game 5 win. Do we use it in any other context?
And it's funny because every sportscaster, whether they be on TV saying that or ESPN SportsCenter saying that, says it with the confidence that they know what that means.
And that we all know it.
But if we collectively got everybody together and said, what does that mean? And then be like, well, obviously it means stopped, prevented.
Prevented.
Got it. You can that's common sense. But no one can tell us what we're getting from our
text. I like Wayne's text, and Dave had something similar. So what else do you got on staving?
Well, I'm going to go in order here. Yeah. I enjoyed last night's game, except the first 5 minutes of the second half, which was all a result of a string of turnovers.
Yes.
That said, there were only 9 turnovers for the game, which means we only had about 5 turnovers outside of that five-minute breakdown. It was great to see more offensive ball movement. Yep. Than has been typical lately. As coach says, passing up some open shots for even more better shots for better shots is what he was talking about. Was great to see. I still miss the backdoor cuts so prevalent with Miller's teams. Yes. Oh, boy, do we all. But there was much less stagnation on offense than with the past several years. Absolutely agree. Last thought, I'm so glad that Josiah got a scholarship this year. He definitely deserved it after last year. And showed it again last night, Jeff in Colorado.
Thank you, Jeff, and true. Thank you for those observations.
Yep, absolutely. Very happy to see our depth of bigs and was extremely impressed with the level of talent on the court and off the bench. I trust Coach will continue with good work to teach this group Beaver values on and off the court. Go Beavs. I don't know who that's from.
Thank you. This is, Johnny, this is just for a day, for whatever it's worth, and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
The most enthusiasm, in a sense, for a while, in terms of a collective group, players, and the text and the it's encouraging to hear that, because we've been feeling it and seeing it, and then to hear some of the texters and callers saying the things that they appreciated, it's refreshing. I enjoy it.
No doubt.
What else you got?
Steve in Salem, we went to the game last night and were pleasantly surprised by what we saw. Good defense, ball movement, and player leadership. Yeah, that is true.
Indeed. Now, Weber State again, there's 30 more games left in the regular season. If they beat Weber State, I don't care how much, well, Weber State, big sky. No, this is a very good team coming in Friday. Weber State is really good. So if the Beavers in a group that's not necessarily young, there's some veteran presence and transfers and so on, but young together and trying to gel together in a cosmopolitan roster and all of that, if they put it all together and get out to 2-0 and beat Weber State, that's going to underscore, I think, all of the enthusiasm that we've been sharing here today.
Yeah. Robert H. says, Dave is right about the barrel staves. A non-sports example of stave as a verb is reassuring. A reassuring presence can stave off panic attack.
Ah, okay.
That was a good one.
That is good, but again, I don't think humans use that generally speaking.
No.
It's only in the sporting world.
Exactly. Katie says, hi, Mike and John. What a great game last night. Good passing and less dribbling. Yay.
An emoji?
We feel the same way. And some exciting team offense demonstrated in dynamic plays. What fun. Looking forward to an exciting season and getting to know our players' stories from around the world. Go Beavers, Katie. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, Katie. They're coming from everywhere, as the man says.
Here's several on this one. We commonly say stave off a cold by staying dry.
Who's we? His family? His household?
I suppose.
They're unique
stave
among us.
Stave off a cold, yes. I mean, it means to prevent, yes.
Yeah.
Staved off hunger is another common usage.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to remember ever hearing it outside the sports milieu. Now, they say, we commonly say we staved off cold, we staved off hunger. How'd you know? Well, we went to American Dream and we staved off hunger. No, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out a way that is commonly used in just give and take everyday, day-to-day chat. And I'm just saying I don't hear it outside of sports, but it was you and Dougie that brought it up that made me laugh last week. I think when you were talking about expressions you hear in sport and really nowhere else. If anybody else can think of one or two others, feel free to.
Yeah. So this one tried to sneak in a few things and so I'm going to say, nice try, but I'll read one of his.
Okay.
I have staved off many bathroom trips over the years in the interest of a sporting event. Does that count? Yes, actually,
it
does.
It's good usage, but I don't think you've said it or thought it even until today.
Yeah.
In terms of putting it that way, so to speak.
Dave from Sandy, this goes way back to the very beginning of the show. Interesting, Mike, how Mike mentions 10-8-56 and Larson's perfect game. I had a baseball signed by Don and gave it to a friend that is a huge baseball fan. I wonder if that game caused my mom to go into labor and me being born on October 9th, 1956.
Oh, wow. I did not know that, Dave. Born the day after the perfecto.
Yeah.
And it was 10 years later to the date, October 8th of 66, that Sandy Koufax pitched his last game, and I was there. You know, I feel like the guy Billy Pilgrim, I think, in Slaughterhouse 5, when he's laying in one bed and the historian in the other bed in the hospital is writing a book on Dresden. And I write him, Dresden, and you hear Billy Pilgrim saying, I was there. Huh? He said he was there. And it's a good movie, by the way. Slaughterhouse 5, I highly recommend it.
Heard of the title.
And a movie. I think George Roy Hill directed. Great cross-cutting in it. An interesting story, unstuck in time. If you haven't read Slaughterhouse 5, it's worth reading. And if you get a chance to see the film, it's an underrated film from the early 70s. But I feel like Billy Pilgrim when I say, Willie Davis dropped two fly balls and then threw, after dropping the second, threw the baseball by the third baseman into the dugout. Three errors on two plays, and until last week, the worst inning defensively in World Series history. So what else you got? I was there.
Was at the game. Was exciting to see a Beaver team pass the ball and open up the court. Yeah, the way the Beavers did last night. Beavers have great potential, plus best big man in a long time. Absolutely.
Good stuff, Doc.
Yeah. Here's a couple that have come in since I started reading. Just a quick observation, great ball movement, better defense by moving your feet, and the overall athleticism of the bigger guys. Those are the main themes that keep coming over and over again.
I know.
Dave Easdale, okay. And then two more. One last thing, Beaver Dam needs to be in full force on Friday night. Let's pack Gill on Friday and get those students to stand up and be loud. He says, I love to see the experience from the Beaver squad of the newcomers having a floor general like DeMarco. Did I already read this one?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah, I did. It's Gene, Jesse.
Oh, yeah.
And then CVB comes in with one, and it's, let me see here. It's a photograph of something. Oh, it's the definition of stave.
Oh, the dictionary, like the Merriam-Webster definition? What do you got?
It is Merriam-Webster.
Okay,
to be broken or crushed inward, or to break or crush something inward, that's stave in, staved in, staving in or staves in. Okay, that's one. And then there's another one here. Stave off, used as a verb, to fend off. Which
there we go. That's what we
to ward off something like a loss. We staved off elimination. But again, the whole point is it is a sports cliche that is not used really very much.
Well, let's go to break, and as we do, just for the fun of it, down the stretch. Thank you for all those great texts, by the way. And it's encouraging. It's exciting to hear all the enthusiasm because women's basketball at Oregon State has been at such a high level and greatness. And another, I think Scott has a huge challenge this year, but he's one of the best coaches in America, and he'll have this team playing, winning basketball. They're going to win a lot of games and I think exceed expectation. Coach Tinkle went to the Elite Eight, for crying out loud, and won three games in a week, three games in 8 days. That equaled the number of NCAA tournament win totals in Ralph Miller's career in 19 years at Oregon State. He did it in 8 days. Wayne went to the tournament in 16. He's had a lot of teams kind of pushing that 17-18. The last couple of years have been, and he has said it, they've been difficult. You know, after the Elite Eight run, it's been a challenge to try to find the right mix and chemistry and try to get yourself back into the fight again in a very real sense. Yeah. And we're only one, you know, we're talking one game here. I don't know how it's all going to play out and unfold, but this type of enthusiasm from kind of a wide ranging, a breadth of fans kind enough to text us, call us today, it's a groundswell, I hope. And as the texter says, if you keep playing that kind of basketball, it's going to bring the students and more in Beaver Nation, and the crowds will pick up. And you know, this team has a chance, I think, to do some good and interesting and exciting things that will remind us, I think, of some of the great days the program has known. Good stuff. Thanks, everybody, for those texts. Let's take a break. And if just for the fun of it, down the stretch, what other expressions are peculiar to sports, so to speak, that we don't rarely, if nothing that comes to mind immediately, then forget it. But when you said staved off elimination and the only time you ever hear it is when it comes to sports, you're right. So what else is there in that sort of category? Expressions, words that are pretty much in our sporting vernacular and common, and we all understand them, but if you have a few to throw at us, we'd love to kick them around. 497-5356, 541-497-5356, the Downward Dog phone line, the University Honda text line on Joe Radio. I know, I would too, a marketing outfit or
right,
something.
Right, or the main office. I got an email from the
email
main
from the main office out of Eugene. Yeah, it was a text, but anyway, we're going to be, we hope to visit with Gene come Friday at 154. Rye Street Southeast in Albany, Stutzman and Krupp Contractors for the Joe Beaver Show. We'll be visiting with Brad Brown and getting a kind of a deeper dive on the whole world that Brad is involved with in the day and age where analytics and tools, technological tools, and that seems to be big today in our conversation with respect to Pac-12 enterprises. But Brad Brown is the director of baseball analytics and advanced scouting. He's the director of video and analytics. He's been with the Beaver baseball program since January of 2018 and thus was involved with the national championship team that year. He created the first analytics team at Oregon State and oversees all of the technology involved in that. Synergy, TrackMan, YockerTech, HitTrax, Rapsodo, BlastMotion, K-Motion, OptiTrax, and Edgertronics. Did you know all of that? Yeah, I've said that many times. Anyway, Brad Brown's going to kind of break all of those tools down a little bit as part of the roadshow on Friday, but we'll also have a free and delicious lunch. We'll have a lot of prizes to give away, tickets to give away to the football game. So that's on Friday at the Joe Beaver Roadshow, 11 to 1, at 154 Rye Street Southeast in Albany. John Wilner goes on to write in the article that we've been emphasizing today, thanks to Dave for kind of bringing us back to it. Wilner writes, it's a Shakespearean twist in the evolving story of the Pac-12. As a business, the Pac-12 networks failed to meet expectations. But from a production standpoint, the Pac-12 networks were a roaring success. And within the ash heap of the storied conference, the guts of the operation, technology, engineers, producers, and directors, is alive and well. The Pac-12 enterprises can produce content for the schools, and whichever linear or streaming companies partner with the Pac-12 on its next media rights deal. And they can produce events for media entities unaffiliated with the conference. In other words, an external revenue stream. Bob Thompson, retired Fox Sports exec, quote, having that set up in San Ramon should be a good advantage for the conference going forward. And Wilner, in conclusion, goes on to say, since the launch of the Pac-12 in 2012, the infrastructure has produced more than 10,000 live events from more than 100 different venues. The key to the operation is a technology that allows essential production to take place at the Pac-12 enterprises, not on site at the event. There's no need for massive, costly production trucks. Instead, the Pac-12, and this is what Dave was talking about earlier, instead, the Pac-12 rents small trucks for football and basketball games. For small-scale Olympic sports events, the on-site technology consists of so-called air packs. Dave was alluding to that. Air packs, which are the size of large luggage roller bags.
What's an air pack?
Well, the size, something an air pack in which all of the necessary technology for a broadcast at a given venue can be put in.
Really?
And yes, they can be positioned at any venue and connected to a few cameras. The video's uploaded to San Ramon, the offices where the enterprises are, where the engineers, producers, and directors are based. The latency is approximately 0.2 seconds. They've broken that down. So the 10 schools that departed for the ACC, Big 10, and Big 12 were required to build on-campus studios to provide content for their media partners. The price tag is believed to run into seven figures for the departing schools.
Uh-huh.
That's not the case for Wazoo, Oregon State, or the Pac-12's incoming schools, which have limited equipment on campus, but transmit the content back to San Ramon. The centralized model is superior to having individual production on campuses that isn't financially efficient, says Michael Molinari, whom we'll try to get on here again mm-hmm. soon. We have one building versus 12 or 16 in the other conferences. The ability to produce high-quality content on campus was attractive to Boise State, San Diego State, and others.
Well, that's great.
And it could be attractive to others, too. So
yeah.
It's a kind of a... It's almost a hidden kind of story in this whole process, but Teresa Gould knew she was sitting on that kind of asset that she has sold, and where that leaves the next step in expansion and getting to that all sports in team. We still need to get one more all in for all sports, football and everything else, because right now it's a Pac-7 plus. One more football school, so to speak, to be added, but a full-time school playing all sports.
Yeah.
Gonzaga didn't qualify as that because they don't have football. But we'll see now, and I think all of this, it excites me to think about what the Pac-12 Enterprises, that asset means to prospective schools that could be invited in. And like Boise State and San Diego State and others say, we like that. That's intriguing. That's helpful to us. This will help us be involved in producing the high-quality events in our campus that we'd like to.
Yeah. Well, we got to get one more. Got a year and a half to do it. And that's it. Now, you can get more if you want to, if they become available. But you got to get one more. And the question is, what school is that? And will this add to the enticement for them to join?
Are we? Do we need one more or not on the fan? Okay,
no.
If you want to scan anything else that may have come through in conclusion, this is a long-form article from Wilner, by the way. Before the conference expanded, Pac-12 Enterprises agreed to produce a Colorado State football game. It's also produced studio shows for the ACC Network, a Golden State Warriors exhibition game, and a WCC preseason basketball media event. Upcoming commitments include dozens of Cal events for the ACC platform, Oregon State wrestling for Flow Sports, and operational work for Arizona's athletic department. There is no limit, according to Wilner, literally on this. Pac-12 Enterprises, quote, can be used by any streamer for any event in the country, says Michael Molinari. For the moment, the profits are modest, Wilner writes, but he goes on to say, you look at the Pac-12 and Jeremiah, he quotes Jeremiah Dickey again, the AD at Boise State. You look at the Pac-12, he says, and the things they were well ahead of the curve on, and those things still hold true today. I don't think they were off base at all. Hence the investment they had in Pac-12 Enterprises, they were right on, and fortunately, we get to be part of that, unquote.
Well, that's great.
It's the AD at Boise State, which is about to, it appears, crack the CFP. Is that first incarnation out tonight, or is it the iteration?
Yeah, it is.
And it'll be interesting to see if Boise, and I think they will be. I think everybody, quote, they're all saying Boise State will be the number 12 team probably in that. Yeah, or maybe higher as a guaranteed, not an at-large. I mean, I don't know how they rank them.
I'm sure they will.
But highest ranked conference out, and maybe even high. I don't know. It's not, we have a misnomer in play in that we think that it's the Power Four and then the Group of Five. The spots go to the highest ranked team. It doesn't matter what conference you're in per se. They're not saying we take the ACC, the Big Ten, the SEC, and the Big 12 and then parcel out the other spots. We take the highest ranked teams from the conferences. So in theory, Boise State could be the number one team in America in their ranking system. Mm-hmm. And just because they're a Group of Five doesn't mean you wait to fill in the other four spots first.
Interesting.
Right?
That part's confusing.
I know everything is, but that's what I think I said is true. I don't know.
Funny thing about Boise State this year is I thought it was just all assumption. Well, Group of Five is going to be Boise State. Well, this year they are great. Some years they're not. Last year, they weren't great.
No, and when the Beavers beat them here a couple of years ago, 34-17, they were not particularly good.
And I thought, oh, look at everybody just putting them in there. The problem is this year they've matched it. They're a great
team. They're really good.
And they deserve everything they get.
Yep.
And they have a Heisman Trophy possibility winner, and they're everything. But before the year started, I thought, oh, come on.
Right.
Why are you doing that? Because we have interest for Oregon State and Washington State. Now, the question I have is, where does Oregon State and Washington State land? Because they're not a part of a group of five. So if they were highest in the rankings, do we keep an eye on Washington State and find out what happens? I think what we see with Washington State this year is what Oregon State will have go through next year before the conference is made.
In its best, one more year operating as an independent.
Right.
And so, in theory, I mean, Notre Dame's an independent, and Notre Dame could be the number one team in their rankings, and so could, in theory, Washington State or Oregon State or any of the other independents could be your top-ranked team, conference affiliation aside.
So as it looks, though, I ask unto you, if Washington State was, let's say, had beaten Boise State and is undefeated and ranked, let's say, by the end of the year, number 12 or 11 or 10, they'd be in.
Yes, they would.
And then you'd look at that and go, okay, just match what they did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Beavers. I do think.
But there's only one more year to deal with that.
As an independent, yes.
Then it becomes one of the leagues.
Yes.
Is it a power? Is it a group? Is it a between?
No, it's got a little bit of a tweener feel. I don't know, Johnny. I still think we're dealing with a Power Four world, and for a while there was talk of the Pac-12, the rebuilt Pac-12, sort of as a tweener, the best of the group of five or whatever's left.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're ahead of ourselves right now. We just got to beat San Jose State, the Beavers. That's their call. Beat San Jose State, get to 5-4, giving yourself a chance the following week to get to 6-4.
Now, we have about a minute left, so there's not enough time because we have another giant group of texts we can get to tomorrow.
Thank you. Yeah.
But this one I have to read because it made me laugh out loud. Nonchalant, although nobody ever uses chalant.
He's been dealing that in a very chalant manner. That's a great point.
I don't know even what the word chalant means. I know nonchalant means uncaring.
Yeah, right. Too loose.
Right.
Care, you know, just not enough attention to detail.
But I thought nonchalant was the word, not chalant by itself.
Well, I don't. Nobody's ever said chalant.
Or is that a No Sean Moreno thing?
Yeah, that could be. Nobody's ever said chalant.
I've never heard of the word chalant.
Only nonchalant.
And I know what the word nonchalant
And we often
means.
Use nonchalant in sports, too. I mean, that's a pretty...
Well, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, kind of nonchalant going up the first baseline. See Giancarlo Stanton.
I mean, if you're like a 10-year-old sports fan and you're using these terms, your parents are going, wow, good for you on these big names, big words.
We'll try to be chalant tomorrow. Thanks for joining us today on The Joe Beaver Show.